We better obliterate that thing.
I think people poo-poo.
He's going to shovel it, and then the shovel guy's going to throw it.
He splits.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. My name is Chris Sharp, and I am your host for this week's highlight show. The Coach and Coordinator Podcast is here to help you lead the next generation of football players. Whether it's implementing new schemes, leadership seminars, or ongoing trends in football, our channel is a resource for you. We started off the month of February by continuing our All In on Offense series. We invited the 2019 Football Scoop Coordinator of the Year and Minnesota State's Offensive Coordinator, Joe Beschorner, onto the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. In this clip from the episode, hear Coach Beschorner discuss using the quarterback in the run game and how you can implement play action off of that.
The other thing I like about using the power read is the play action off of it. And it honestly for us was the simplest play action to teach, to the point where it really was, we were throwing to one guy, the pop pass. And I honestly can't tell you a whole heck of a lot what we were doing in those other parts because we just never threw it. It was always to that tight end releasing on, you know, on a pop pass. Because you think about it, again, your safety's really worried about being out leveraged, about the ball going to the edge and being able to fit where he's supposed to in the run. Your linebackers certainly are moving towards a fit, and now you find this seam, and you know you have to be patient with it or you'll run through the window real quick, but you find the seam in the defense that you can hit with the tight end. So I guess what I'm wondering, I didn't even ask you first, is that something you guys do? Have you know? Do you use the pop pass like that, play action off of the power read?
We do not use the pop pass to the tight end, but we do a lot of play action off the power read. Because we run with more jet, a lot of the stuff involves the running back, and then, you know, some exchange routes on the perimeter, or we'll do the front side pop pass to the tight end. We haven't done that for a couple of years, but we did it a few years ago. Some more pop pass stuff. We usually kind of widen the tight end into a wider seam. Most of our stuff involves exchange routes with the perimeter receivers. It involves the running back. But we have, in the past, involved the tight end on a pop or almost a wheel.
Yeah, Coach. Well, coach us through some of those, the play action. Again, for us, it was the pop, and I think I have a cut-up of that on YouTube. I'll put a link to it there. But I'm interested in what you guys do on the play action and, you know, how you're going about protecting it as well.
Yeah, so that's the key, is how do you protect it, right? For us, we like to keep a tight end in on the backside to make that as long as we can. Now, the guard is going to open, pull, and kick out. Everybody else is gapping down. Not climbing, obviously, because it's a play-action pass. You know, if we're using a motion, then more than likely we're going to get the tailback out involved in the route. Sometimes we'll exchange it, the running back will block, and then the jet guy will be involved in the route. One of the, you know, easiest ones that we've done is, you know, take the tailback and wheel him up the sideline and have the outside receiver run a post to the near safety. That's kind of been our bread and butter off of that. And then just running four verticals off of it as well has been pretty good. Well, it becomes three verticals with the motion. And then, you know, you can run a vertical out concept onto the perimeter too. But for the most part, you know, wheeling the running back out and up the sideline has been one where we've had the most success, or running using the running back to run the pop, where you guys use the tight end, you ran it with a running back. We use the running back because we run it with jet for the most part.
It is always productive to sit back and evaluate events in your life. St. Charles North High School's head coach, Robert Pomazak, has developed an entire system based on defensive evaluations. On Tuesday, Coach Pomazak shared his knowledge on evaluating tendency breakers and various defensive coverages.
Yeah, I mean, whether you're an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, you're going to have your own fingerprint. And that usually doesn't change because you're going to find what you're comfortable with and you're going to do that, you know. And, I mean, just kind of going back to what you said, there were certain situations from a field zone standpoint, particularly, you know, if the ball crossed the 50, plus 50 to plus 20, where, you know, you can almost guarantee we were bringing a boundary pressure. And you kind of start to look at, okay, well, why are we doing this? Was it a formation situation, or were we just getting more aggressive because our back's against the wall? And a good offense is going to look at the same thing, and they're going to prepare for it just the same way that you're trying to defend against it. So I think if you're not looking at it, you're not getting a complete picture of your defense from a holistic standpoint. And then you can kind of connect the dots as to, if I'm calling a six-man pressure and I'm running a zero behind it, then is that the best coverage for our guys? Do we have that type of athlete that we can do that? And then you can really start to look at how you're going to formulate your defensive philosophy.
Coach, the next section then is coverage. And again, just five questions you're looking at here. Give us an overview of what you want to flesh out.
Well, this is probably, as a defensive back coach, it's probably my favorite to look at because it's so telltale. But we'll look at how effective each call was, average yards per call, like gains or loss. Looking at touchdowns, obviously the point of the game is not to let the other team score. So there are certain coverages that if you look and if your percentage of touchdowns is kind of skewed, then you got to look at why that is. And then tackles for losses. But more importantly for us, it's, again, is the coverage we're using something that we're practicing, and is the time being allotted in practice equitable to how much we're using it? And then how effective is that coverage? I mean, it's great to have 10 coverages within your scheme, but if you're only running one 3% of the time out of a 600 rep season, then does it warrant the development within your program, or can you get that another way? And can you spend that time on one of your major coverages and really honing in on some of the deficits? You know, we're a quarters-based coverage team, and I would much rather spend that time developing that scheme so that we are able to cover all the green areas much more efficiently, and maybe adding a wrinkle to it that doesn't change the foundation of what we're doing, but certainly gives us a little bit different of a look than having a completely different coverage. So that's always really important for us. And then just kind of looking at the zone percentage, man percentage, and then obviously the down and distance, were we successful? You know, were we successful in the pass game on that coverage call, and why or why not? Is it an issue of communication? Is it a route issue? You know, our team's taking advantage of our shell based off of what they see pre-snap and taking advantage with a specific route combination. All of those things kind of get intertwined with each other. And then you look at, what's going to keep us in the best position to be successful. And we'll also look at offensive personnel groups and formations, particularly, against those upper echelon opponents who maybe do a lot of motion formations and kind of can compromise your defense by, stretching you fairly thin, horizontally and vertically, and kind of see how maybe you can start game planning against that for the coming years. Because most of the time, just like you said, defenses have, their tendencies. Offenses, if they have success, they're probably going to come in with that being a number one on the game plan list as they move into the next season against you.
Prioritizing the offseason is crucial to the success of your team. On USA Football's Inside the Program series, former Cathedral High School head coach Rick Strife offers his insight into how to handle the offseason. In particular, he focuses on the best ways to install your scheme during the summer.
Our coordinators will sit down with each other, and they will literally plan out their monthly installs so that the defense is installing something that the offense is ready to handle. The offense is installing something that the defense is ready to handle. Now, when we get to July, it's kind of fun. They listen to those guys chess match against each other, and they end up scheming against each other for July. And I go, guys, we're playing Ben Davis first game. Get ready for those. But it's okay. It's really good. It's kind of a very competitive thing. But what we will do is we start all over again. So the first day of June, the first practice, we're doing starts and stance, and here's our base formation, and here's our first two base running plays, for example. Or this is our base defense. Here is where we're going to line up. So we start all over again as if we're training all the kids with zero knowledge from the beginning. And that helps our sophomores, even though they played in the system as freshmen, it helps everybody make sure that they're still all on the same page. And then we progress. For example, on the defense, start out with our two or three base coverages and practice those for 2 weeks. Then we'll put our first maybe change in the front. Then we go The next week may be our blitz pickups. It's a progression of install. Same thing on the offensive side. Most of the time it's an inside out run, and three-step drop was where we start, and then we just kind of keep advancing it from there. When we start to put our offense in, we kind of go from an inside out format. Fullback dive may be your first play, for example, because it's your inside belly, whatever that might be. And it may be a play we may only run 10, 12 times a year. But we start on the inside and then gradually go with our gap schemes. We'll go gap out. And then usually once we get our gap stuff installed, for example, you know, whether it be ISO or powers, now we're going to go to our zone blocking. And so we'll go inside zone, then outside zone. And really, we only have 6 or 7 plays, but we start out with our gap run first, and then we go to our zone running second. And even during the regular season, for example, Tuesday is, during inside period, is gap day. Wednesday is zone day. And so we will practice the plays that we're going to install, or they're going to use during the game. And again, Tuesday is going to be a gap day. Wednesday is going to be a zone day for us, or a gap sound team.
On Thursday, we took a deep dive on defense with Illinois Wesleyan University's defensive coordinator, Grant Caserta. Coach Caserta's unit led Division III football in both sacks and tackles for loss. Learn the keys to having a successful blitz package and also the details of executing twists and stunts.
Yeah, I think just repping the different techniques that we're going to use when we're blitzing or stunting, I think that's, you know, the devil's in the details when it comes to, you know, if we're doing a twist stunt up front. We'll spend more time actually giving those guys specific landmarks on where we want them to hit, or, you know, we want your hands on his shoulder and then you're going to get upfield, different things like that, talking about the path to where they're trying to go. We'll spend more time on that than just running the play to run the play and just make sure you're in your gap at the end. That's not really what we're trying to do. We want to make sure that they understand why we're doing what we're doing so that they can run the thing like we design it. You know, I think sometimes we put in stuff and we don't give them enough detail as to how to do the job, and that hurts us sometimes. So we're going to try to really hammer down the technique, exactly what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it, so that way the guys understand, you know, if this guy slides to me, this is how I approach him. If he slides away from me, this is what I do. So, you know, just spending time explaining the goal of these stunts early on really helps us. And then during the course of the year, I think it becomes second nature, and the guys just get a lot better at it as we go. And it's kind of a snowball effect. You know, things just start get rolling. They get better at it. It becomes second nature.
You see that all the time in watching a lot of games where a stunt might look really good, how it's drawn up, but then it's not executed well, and there's a huge escape lane for the quarterback, or they put a run play right into it and gash you. You know, and you talked quite a bit just about the detail that goes into it. So we get an idea of that detail. Coach us through, you know, a basic twist for you and the coaching points that you guys are going to emphasize, again, to be able to make that thing successful on game day.
Sure. So we've got one pressure we really like, where we're gonna bring either one of our inside linebackers off the edge into the C-gap, and then we're going to set the 3 technique to that side and have him go right through the B gap, and then the end's going to wrap all the way down to the near A gap. So the coaching point for the 3 technique on that one is he's going to get off the ball as hard as he can, and he's going to try to get into the inside shoulder of the tackle. So a lot of times when we'll walk the linebacker up and we'll get the 3-man slide over to the linebacker side, and that tackle's going to kick all the way out to the linebacker. You know, the guard's going to plan on taking the end, and then the center's going to take the tackle. But when that tackle starts to kick and give us a ton of space, we want to get up the field and kind of separate him, you know, continue to push him upfield so we can create more space as the guard is coming to get us as the 3 technique. So we're going to get our hands on his inside shoulder and try to push him upfield, and then we're going to work back to the quarterback. So that creates a little bit of more space for the end, who's looping back underneath to the A gap. So that way, you know, that guard's really got to push upfield with the 3 technique, as the 3 technique's pushing the tackle upfield. It's going to create a lot of space for the end. So, you know, we may get lucky and the center might slide away, and then now we got a 1-on-1 with the running back, which is a great situation. But the more realistic situation is we get the center sliding to us, And now the end's got a lot of space. So we're not afraid to let that guy cross the center space and go all the way to the opposite A-gap or to stick his foot in the ground and rip up through the center. So, but it really starts with the three technique. Like I was saying, his aiming point's going to be the inside shoulder of that tackle. He's going to get hands on that guy and kind of push him upfield to start to create the space.
Friday brought us both the weekend and a legendary coach in the state of Ohio. Tom McDaniels, the USA Today and Nike National Coach of the Year award winner in 1997, has taken his experiences and is passing them on to the next generation of coaches. Coach McDaniels shares his secrets to educating yourself as you grow from an assistant coach into a head coach.
You know, whether you become a coordinator, you become a head coach, and these are maybe more specific points. Once that happens, and I feel this way and can never be talked out of it, you have to expect the most from your best players, and you cannot be afraid to coach your best players really hard. You know, we used to have a slogan, it was expect the most from the best. And then it wasn't just a slogan on the wall in the locker room or the weight room, but we explained that. You know, so whoever the most talented guy was in the room at that particular time, and maybe I knew who it was, maybe I didn't know it, that guy and those group of people needed to know that the expectations for them were going to be greater, you know, than anybody else. You know, the Bible taught us to whom much is given, much is expected. And so we're going to carry that thought, that concept over. And yet one of the things that I have seen and I've witnessed it with assistants who work for me, and I've witnessed it, you know, when I watch other people go about their business of coaching, is they pampered great players and were afraid to coach them hard. And I think that's a mistake, and I would hope to avoid young coaches making that mistake. If you've got a great player, then you need to coach his butt off, and you need to coach him hard, and you need to tell him that that's how it's going to be, and that the expectations for him are greater, you know, than they are, you know, for maybe somebody with less ability. But that's one of the things that I think is hugely important. Another is that I think it's important for them to learn to delegate responsibility. I gave my guys coaching job description. If you were a linebacker coach, then this was your job description. And if you were, you know, the O-line coach, then this was your job description. And then I expected them to use that as a lesson plan for themselves, you know, that they would use then, you know, to coach their players and to prove their players, you know, at their position. But I think that you got to delegate responsibility, and then you have to expect those guys to meet the responsibility. In the 27 or so years that I was the head coach, there was not one time during the course of a ball game when I made a suggestion to my defensive coordinator about what to do on defense. I trusted them, I trusted their preparation, and then I didn't just give them the responsibility and title, but I gave them responsibility, you know, during the course of games. I don't think there was one time in my head coaching career when I ever went over and, you know, tried to make a suggestion, you know, about what they might do when I'd spent all of my time preparing offensively for that opponent. So those are a couple of things. And then one other thing that I'll mention, and whether we expand upon this or not, that's up to you. I collaborated with Bob Wiley, you know, who was most recently a coach for the Browns. He's going to coach in Canada this year. But I've been a friend of his for a long time since he was an assistant at Ohio University and recruited some of my players. But we came up with a list of what we considered to be easy things. And, you know, this again is a suggestion, you know, to anybody that's a position coach or a new head coach or a veteran coach. Do the easy things well. You know, let's start there, because there are a lot of things in the game that are easy. Stance is easy because you're totally in control of that. So let's make sure that we're in a good stance. And I've got 18 of these things listed. But these are things that as a young head coach, make sure your team and make sure your coaches are doing these things well. Alignment is totally within your control, both vertical and horizontal. It splits, you know, as an offensive lineman. That's totally in control. Communication, and I won't read the whole list to you, but, you know, we can get so caught up with X's and O's and with, you know, maybe the more difficult stuff that we overlook the easy stuff. And there are a whole bunch of easy things that if we just did these things,
I think we could win a lot of games on these things alone.
Thank you for tuning into this week's highlight show. Don't forget to like and subscribe the show and to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. The Coach and Coordinator Podcast will be back on Monday with more information and more analysis.